You are listening to a podcast from the New York Oracle Users Group. The information given here is provided on an as-is basis. The presenters, as well as the officers and steering committee of the New York Oracle User Group, disclaim all warranties expressed or implied with regard to this information and will not be responsible for any loss or damage arising out of the use of any information contained in this presentation.
I'm with Oracle, and I'm in Oracle's Enterprise Solutions Group. You've probably worked with some of us in the past. We're a specialized group that focuses on one or many pillars within Oracle. This is actually my second go-round at Oracle. My first go-round, I was here in 95 through 99 in the New York Metro in the consulting organization. And then I came back, I guess about 3 years ago, I came back. Worked in consulting, ran the data warehouse business intelligence consulting commercial group of a few hundred people, and then they pulled me over to the enterprise solutions group, and I've really been very focused either on business intelligence or Exadata. And we're not going to talk about Exadata tonight, but you know, it's a big thing that's where there's a high amount of affinity towards anything to do with BI or data warehousing that's in there. My time away from Oracle, I got involved with a number of things, including I'm on the faculty of the Data Warehouse Institute. I've keynoted a bunch of their sessions. I teach there at least once a year, if not more, different types of classes. And in between that time, I also published a book, which we're going to talk about some of the themes in that book here. It was a columnist for DM Review for a number of years also. So, you know, I guess I date my Oracle experience to, you know, Probably seven is when I really was hot and heavy into a lot of my DBA activities. I was a DB2 person that converted over. Previous to that, I was an IDMS person, for anybody that's a mainframe person that remembers that. I'm here to talk to you a bit about, though, keeping your eye on performance and what this is about. I have three major topics that I'm going to talk about. These are common topics. They're not overly technical topics, but the things which I found, being a technical person by nature, when I want to have that conversation with business folks about why would they want to do data warehousing, business intelligence, all these other things that we know they need to do, these are great ways to have the conversation that we have there. I'm going to talk about the concept of the rise of the chief performance officer, what that's all about, and I'm not here to sell you chief performance officer as a you need to have one, but what happens in managing performance in your organization, particularly in turbulent times like we're in right now. I'm going to talk about Oracle's theme of management excellence, which is kind of the all-encompassing theme of how we tie together everything from data warehousing to business intelligence to EPM and all the pieces in between. And if you haven't seen the latest bullseye diagram that we use to describe our BI platform, I'm going to go through that also for you to understand how we're starting to see everything solidifying back together here. So a little bit of non-Oracle stuff, a little bit of kind of, you know, Oracle theory stuff, and a little bit of, you know, what are our products about for where we are right now. And I hope to have you all wrapped up in the right amount of time here. So I want to talk about the natural, the unavoidable, and the ambiguous. You know, the good, the bad, the ugly. You know, turbulence is natural in a business. You know, whether that's through competition, you know, whether that's through governance, you know, whether that's through globalization that you may have, you know, finance, money markets. I mean, you can make your own list here of things that happen. I mean, we happen to have gone through a very difficult time. You know, particularly us here in New York with, you know, a lot of the problems there were. But think back. There's always been things that have been changing in the marketplace. So it's natural for this turbulence to happen in an organization. But performance management, whether you're in uptime or downtime, is unavoidable. You know, particularly in a downtime, I don't know if you've been getting the pressure, but I've been getting the pressure from my customers of, I need the numbers faster. I need more granularity on those numbers. I need to understand more so that I can get ahead of the curve and not get caught. But people want to, these are some of the things you may want to know. What's the revenue? What's the, you know, if the market is tanking or if the market's going up, everybody cares about revenue one way or the other. Market's tanking, market's going up, everybody cares about margin. I'm assuming you're a for-profit company. Everybody cares about their budgets. Everybody cares about these things. It's just that they become more important, and we get more pressure on us, the people that are delivering this data, particularly in bad market times. The problem in most organizations is who owns all this performance data? Yeah, we as people delivering this data know what's there, but who in your organization is actually responsible for the key performance indicators for the whole organization? You know, sales may be responsible for the numbers. Finance may be responsible for their numbers. We may have, the people in supply chain responsible for their numbers. And when it comes down to it, it's everybody's problem and it's nobody's problem. So I pondered on this a number of years ago. And as part of my doctoral work that I was doing at Stevens across the river, came up with this concept of chief performance officer. And the concept of chief performance officer, I wrote the book back in 2003, was, and I'm going to talk a lot about it, but it's really having a single point of focus for performance and accountability in your organization, being able to use technology to make that happen. So lucky for me, things kind of caught on a little bit about this. For those of you that don't know, we have a chief performance officer now for the United States of America. He's a junior cabinet level position. And interestingly enough, for those that did follow it, President Obama announced a chief performance officer, a woman from McKinsey, who, interestingly enough, I had noticed throughout the years was quoting things from my book but not attributing them to me. And then somehow she convinced President Obama to have a chief performance officer and name her to it. Well, I guess karma, because she had same thing as a lot of others. She had tax problems, and she actually had to withdraw the same day that Tom DeLay withdrew from that. And then eventually he picked Mr. Zients for this, who was more of a low-profile type of person, kind of slid that position into there. But interestingly enough, you're seeing this term come up, chief performance officer. What is it all about? In fact, this gentleman, Daniel DeLomo up here, out at Windham out in Jersey, I actually spent time with him talking about how performance, he's a totally non-technical person, but how could business intelligence and his big data warehouse help him to make better decisions on what's going out there? He convinced the president of the organization enough that to create this position for him. So what's it all about, and what is a CPO? It fills in a gap on a bunch of things that are missing in your organization right now. And I can tell you they most likely are missing in your organization. A single point of focus for performance and performance metrics for the key performance indicators that drive your business. We're real good at creating data warehouses. We're real good at creating reports. The problem is, how does the organization consume them, and who ultimately is responsible for that and reports back for all that information? And they wake up and their sole job is getting the metrics out to the organization and being proactive about them to having to measure that. I would challenge you that there is not a single person in your organization for that. And if you're lucky, you may have a small group like a PMO or something that may be responsible for that. But most of it's scattered about in all different places. So it provides a single point of focus. The other thing that it does is, part of my job at Oracle is to sit more than half the time with business folks and understand what are they really looking for, and then help to translate that over into what's happening on the technology end. And the most common thing you hear is there's just too much data now. We don't think it's too much data because we have great data warehouses and technology that can handle this, and we can kind of filter up normal people outside of our realm that don't know our own little pig Latin and secret handshakes that we have in our own little technology world here. They think that there's just too much data out there, and they just, give me my numbers. I don't care about all this other stuff you're going to do. Cutting through the noise, cutting through the static in the data is critical. I think the third bullet really kind of sums it up. Actually, last night I was in this is a crazy travel week for me. I live in Jersey, but we live in Maine in the summer. And so Monday I drove from Maine, anybody know where Bar Harbor, Maine is? I'm up by there. So I'm, out in the Netherlands, up by Canada. And so I drove from there down to New Hampshire, went to a customer. I drove to, and then yesterday I drove to Providence, was at a customer, and then I took the train down today from Providence to New York, and then I'm going to a customer tomorrow morning in Philadelphia. Nice little stop. It's a nice little stop over my Amtrak. Why am I saying this? Last night I was in the hotel and Top Gun was on, and this heads-up display. It was on Nick at Night TV Land or something with the commercials and all. But when you're traveling, you're in a hotel, you just kind of watch anything. Tom Cruise is cruising along in that plane, and he's got his heads-up display. He's got maybe 20 things or less that he cares about for driving this multi-million-dollar killing machine, this jet that's out there. He's got the altimeter, he's got the weapon system, all these other things. But there's millions of data points that are feeding that within that system in there. And what most organizations don't have is that Tom Cruise heads-up display saying, your altitude is this. Absolutely, and we deliver that to our executives. What we usually do is we deliver to the executives a big, long tape measure and say, drop it out of the plane and see how high you are. We give them tools, but we don't necessarily give them what they need. So having this heads-up display and the concept that's out there, you know, filtering and relevance is a whole nother thing, is what data is really relevant to your organization. You know, part of what I do when I go into customers is I look at what other executive dashboards look like. And I will tell you, some of them have the weather on there. Great if you're selling umbrellas or if they're the Yankees and you care if it's going to rain tonight. But if you're, you know, regular business, it doesn't depend on the weather. Why are you eating up that real estate doing it? So another complaint that I get is, you know, why is this relevant to me? Why'd you give me this information? Why'd you waste time building this thing? Now, when I came up with this concept, my advisor over at school, he said, well, Tony, you're talking about what the COO should be doing, because the COO should really understand all the moving parts of the organization so that the CEO can kind of worry about, you know, managing the board and, you know, managing more upward, managing with the public. The problem is that most of us are made of our organization so complex that the poor CEO, you know, she has nothing better to do than to keep the lights on and get product out the door and can't worry about the performance. So who is the person in an organization that's responsible for performance? You know, the CFO cares about some financial numbers. You know, somebody else cares about sales numbers. Somebody else cares about, you know, your IT service level numbers. Well, there isn't one point of focus that there is for this. So this is what the chief performance officer is all about. You accomplish it through six C's that are going to be very familiar to you as you do this. If you have a background in data warehouse business intelligence, they seem, you know, fairly common sense. The first thing is you got to be a collector. You got to be able to collect the data from many places in the organization. So you got to be able to get out there and grab the easy data. This is the easy data to grab here, your ERP, supply chain management, data warehousing. That's the easy stuff to get after. But then you got to start digging in, and you got to start pulling information from the departmental databases, or from those S-based things that the financial people use, or all the external sources of all this data. Maybe your marketing department is buying syndicated data and other things which are out there. What the CPO needs to do, these first three C's, by the way, are the data-related C's. The last three are the process-related C's. So it's collecting all the data that's out there. And what you want to do is understand and uncover where it is. You will find, if you've gone through an exercise ever where you've gone to root cause analysis and tried to present that on reports or dashboards to customers, that 90% of the time or more, the key performance indicator they're looking for is not in the first two boxes up there. It's not in your easy-to-get systems. It's not in your existing data warehouse or data mart. It's most likely in the bottom two. Actually, the middle two, your departmental databases or your spreadsheets and your access. And like it or not, that's what they need, and that's what we need to deliver as owners of this data, because we really own the data. You know, they own the business of the data. We own the ones and zeros of the data. The second C, though, is around consolidator. And what this is about is, you guys shop at Costco or BJ's or Sam's Club? You know, we don't have any up in Maine, no Costco. No BJ's. We got a Sam's Clubs up there. But when I go there, one of the things that we always buy is the Bounty 18-pack. You know, you get like 18 of them for like $10, and you come home with them, and wow, that's cool. I got all these paper towels. Well, you know, in our house in Jersey, it's a house from 1940. We got a small pantry. And what I come up with is 18 paper towels. I put two of them up in the pantry. I put the rest down in the basement. And if my wife asks me, where's the paper towels? They're in the pantry or they're in the basement. What I didn't do was come home with 18 paper towels and say, I got a really good deal for $10.99 on this. Let's get a contractor and build a $4,000 bigger pantry because I got a good deal on these paper towels. The analogy here, the paper towels is all the data, and the pantry is the data warehouse. Put it in a logical place. The technology exists right now, and it's existed for years, a couple of years now, to be able to federate data quite easily if you understand where the data is, like using the federation engine with OBIE and not just going directly after the data warehouse. Or other non-Oracle tools do this also. Or if you're not using that, just using an enterprise service bus for doing this. There's other ways you can look at without building the mother of all data warehouses. One of the big problems that we get is that we finally find out the data that they need. So we did this collection exercise. We've kind of collected stuff. We haven't kind of put it, we've collected, but we haven't put it into the pantry yet. And then we only build this big killer pantry and we eat up all our budget and it can't be done. What you want to figure out is, what do you lift and shift? What do you use traditional ETL for? And what do you stay and integrate? What do you use, messaging and buses for tying out to? And part of that's going to be latency driven. Part of that is going to be volume driven on what you do. Most, though, will be a hybrid. Most of the projects that I see now, they're not 100% lift and shift. Some of that data is staying in place, and somebody's integrating to it as compared to moving it all around. And you want to leverage the platform, EPMB and EPM, business intelligence, all these pieces. There's built-in functionality into a lot of tools for doing this. So don't go try to recreate what's going on out there. For example, in OBIE, anybody use the action links? OBIE people here? No business intelligence people here? Okay. In Oracle Business Intelligence, we have the ability that called action links. So you can draw the aggregated data from the data warehouse. For example, sales information for a particular customer. But then you want to see the sales line items. It has the ability for going out into Oracle eBusiness Suite and directly grabbing that information without you having to bring all that granular information in and warehouse it for you. These capabilities are out here in the Oracle tools and other tools for doing this. Now, condenser. This is where you get down to what are the dozen metrics. About 11, 12 years now, I've been spending time with customers when I was out and doing consulting, and then when I came back here to Oracle, trying to understand what are the key performance indicators that drive their business. Let's dissect that a little bit. Key performance indicator, work it backwards. It's an indicator, okay? That means it has to be a number. Performance, it's measuring something important, something important to the performance of your business. Key, there ain't a lot of them. So you got key performance indicator. Not every metric is a key performance indicator. Most organizations have 12 or less key performance indicators that they can drive their business with. They need hundreds, maybe thousands of metrics to support that. But what are those key performance indicators that there are out there? Let me give you an example that you might find quite interesting. Hopefully you don't find it interesting based on experience. I worked with a prison system. So the prison system, the main number that the governor cared about with them was variance to budget. So that was a key performance indicator they were looking at. I gave you a budget. How are you doing based on your budget? Now, what they needed to understand were some of the drivers for that. So they wanted to understand what are some of the leading, you're familiar with leading indicators. So what's an early warning indicator that the budget's going to go up or down? This is kind of the interactive part of the presentation. What do you think would be an early warning indicator that a prison's going to make or not make its budget? This is where you answer now. Raw number of prisoners, very good. What else? Think about what would drive costs in a prison.
Cost of goods,
another one.
Staff,
yep. Labor's a big thing in prison with the unions and everything.
Utilities,
particularly around this time of year. What they found out with this organization is actually, it actually is related to labor. And they found that this was unique to them, that they found that they kept blowing their overtime budget drastically. I mean, blowing it by 500, 700, 800%. So for them, the early warning indicator of whether they're going to make or not make their budget was understanding how's overtime doing, how are we doing budget against overtime. The other stuff is important, but that's kind of the one that drives them on there. So then they ask the next question, what's an early warning indicator that you're going to have too much overtime? Interactive part number two here. Why would you have overtime in a prison?
Understaffed,
number of prisoners. Number of prisoners is a common thing that happens. Oh, I thought you had a good one. Vacation, sick outs, planned and unplanned. With these guys, you know what we figured out? It was actually something called incidents. They had an abnormal incidents being slip and fall, power outage, a riot, anything that was out of the ordinary, incidents. They had a very, very high ratio of incidents compared to similar type of organizations. So they were already out of whack with that. Incidents usually caused more labor that was needed for more overtime. It was exacerbated by the problem that they didn't have technology. When an incident happened in this organization, the officer that witnessed it needed to document it. And this was only 9 years ago. Their method for documenting it was a Selectric with triple carbon, where they filled out a report, an accident report about what happened. The average time to fill out a report was 2 hours. So if you think about that, you just get a couple of incidents, your incidents are trending up, you can't take that officer off of the floor just to fill out the report. You got to backfill that officer with somebody else. So you're calling somebody in, you're extending shifts, all these type of things. So what happened with them, that key performance indicator for them was, you know, incident, it's basically incident trending. You're not going to be able to react immediately if incidents start to go up and down. What are you going to do? You know, tell, please don't riot today? You know, instead, actually what happened with this organization, once they understood those key performance indicators, they ended up saying, well, the best way to fix that is automation of this IBM Selectric process, this typewriter process that was there. And they would, you know, unless they dug down, understood the key performance indicators, they never would have known that. That, yeah, I had to kind of walk them through and say, tell me that. You know, it's kind of like, you know, all of us in America are obsessed with losing weight. And if you want to lose weight, you don't stand on the scale and say, oh, I weigh so much. And come on, please get lighter. You find your key performance indicators, you know, carbs, number of miles run, number of calories, number of amphetamines taken, whatever it is. You figure out what's your driver that's there. That's what this is about, condensing down to those couple of metrics that really matter. I'll end out condenser with one other story. In my time away from Oracle, I was invited to speak at a conference for an ERP company, a three-letter ERP company. You figure it out. They were all proud of their dashboard. They wanted me to come in and talk about my book and Chief Performance Officer and all this and how dashboards are so important. We want to show you this dashboard, Tony. And they put in a screen in front of me, which literally had 130 metrics on a single screen. I mean, it looked like, you know, the old Star Trek beeping dashboard. You couldn't even read what was on there. And they said, we figured out every metric that could be used for a particular business. And, you know, being the good consultant, I did the, that's interesting. You know, meanwhile, being the guy from Jersey, I'm like, are you guys smoking crack? You got to be nuts. I mean, this is crazy. But that they honestly believe that they had kind of solved world hunger with this. When it came down to it, there's really a dozen or so that are out there for this. So that's what condensing is about. Communicating. This is more about right timing data. So again, the right data, the right people at the right time. About 7 years ago, I worked with an organization in financial services, and really sharp IT folks that called me in because they were scared that they couldn't get this project done because they wanted to build. They had seven general ledgers running globally around the country, and they wanted to build a dashboard that put a little tachometer on there that every time there was a journal entry, the CFO would see this dashboard tick up and down for every journal entry that was in there. For any of you that know anything about financial systems, you're like, interesting, and you're thinking smoking crack. But it's, you know, My question was, why? They said, well, the CFO is not getting data fast enough, so we figure we might as well over-deliver and give him the most granular data in real time. Then he can't complain. But what it came down to was understanding one of the systems, their books were taking a lot longer to close at the end of the month. It was giving him a headache, so he wanted a mid-month trial balance into what was going on out there. He just wanted to see the numbers in the middle of the month. And nobody ever bothered to ask that. You know, one of the things that you really need to guard against, and what, you know, the concept behind chief performance officers, to liberally use technology, not to crush everything with technology. Don't bring it to the most granular real time, you know, and have, build the mother of all data warehouses. Just kind of step back, and you're kind of understanding how do you deploy technology, you know, and as compared to how do you get inside of the technology. So now you talk about collaboration. You know, collaboration is how do you make these 12 metrics, and then there's supporting these 12 KPIs and these couple hundred supporting metrics, the DNA of your organization. How do you get people to kind of tie into this? You know, one of the best things you can do is provide a platform, the Found It, Fix It platform, where they can take actionable items against these metrics that they found. So finding a way of using your architecture, whether that's using your SOA, your service bus, or some form of integration, where if something goes wrong, they can actually go and change it and fix it upstream, or they can do what if analysis. What if I would have fixed it? So maybe hanging an S-based cube off of this thing so that they can kind of do a little what if analysis against this. You know, the other thing is that provide what the CPO does, because he's really sitting at the top of all these other pieces here of information, provides that cross line of business communication that happens. And the last thing is controller. And this is not, you know, the title controller like a financial controller. This is more around governance. How many of you have a data governance process in your organization? Is it working? Was it painful? It's very painful. Most people don't even start it because they just don't want to go through the mess of doing that. You know, what a lot of people end up doing is just governance. And governance is kind of, here's the rules from the top down. But then they never follow through on the stewardship, which is who actually owns it and is responsible for those rules that are associated with it. The CPO needs to make sure that this is happening. I mean, this is what the six C's are all about. You know, three data C's: collect the data, consolidate it, and condense it. So find out where it is, logically understand and put it together, find the most important metrics. Then what you want to do is you want to get that in right time to somebody, you know, the right level of granularity also. You want to enable people to kind of collaborate around this data so this data kind of flows through the lifeblood of your organization, and then keep some control over it. Because the worst thing that can happen is we put a data warehouse out there, or a BI tool even on top of some data mart, and we don't control how people are using it, then all of a sudden we have seven definitions of profitability. And who do they blame for that? They don't blame themselves, the business people. They blame us. Well, your systems couldn't handle it. Well, maybe you should have smartened up a little bit in the beginning and worked with us in kind of this, you know, understanding what the metrics are. Now, I don't have any grandiose dreams, even though I pointed out a bunch of chief performance officer things here in the beginning, about everybody's going to have a chief performance officer. But I think embracing these six C's solidified across your organization. And who's the best people to do that? It's us, the people that come from a technology background and the people that come from a finance background. Why? Because we're typically number oriented and we have our fingers in everybody's pie already. I mean, like it or not, people need to go through IT to get to their data, and people need to go through finance to get their budget. So typically that's where it comes from. Now, what Oracle's done is has anyone seen the management excellence portion of what we've done yet? This is interesting because this was actually started by the Hyperion people before Oracle bought Hyperion, and it has a vastly similar path to what I was doing at the same time, even though we weren't talking to one another. So either great minds think alike or insanity is contagious. I'm not sure which one. But what Oracle has talked about here is that operational excellence, which is typically what you do with your ERP systems, your CRMs, and all these, yeah, they're going to get you a competitive advantage, but it's going to reach a point of diminishing returns. There's only so much optimization you can pull out of an IT, system automating things, what you're doing. So what we think is that management excellence, applying the same type of principles that you did to your ERP and other systems, Six Sigma, these type of things, but applying to the management process. And the key parts of the management process are reporting, planning, forecasting, all the things that are based on data warehouse and business intelligence. We believe that if you apply that discipline, you can be smart. You know, these are marketing words, smart, agile, and aligned up here, but you will have an organization which can get that same type of benefit. Let me explain this diagram because I think it really helps to drive it home. So you've got, you see colors okay? Well, the tall ones are green. So assume that these, assume that the tall ones are green, and the green is the control group. So this is the normal organization, and how, you know, how basically their costs, ratio of costs are going down. And what the main reason that this happened, and the blue is the excellence group, we're called, instead of the control group. If you look what happened here between 92 and 2000, that's when everybody was doing ERP, all racing towards Y2K. Everybody saw improvements that were happening here, and that the cost of operating the business, particularly from a financial end, in a ratio perspective, were driven down. But then what happened after everybody implemented their ERPs? Well, the organizations that started to apply that same discipline to their reporting and their management processes continued to see benefits, while the other organizations, well, they reached that ERP breakpoint and they kind of just, you know, they couldn't optimize the process anymore. So what this means is that we can apply the same type of principles that were applied, similar to what happened on an ERP. If you could think about this, what this used to look like. I started my career in Prudential Insurance over in Jersey. I did about 2 weeks as a Pru COBOL programmer. Anyone know what Pru COBOL is? Okay, Pru COBOL, two theories behind Pru COBOL. Theory one is that what they did was they took COBOL. Anyone a COBOL person? So they called definition sections up the top, and they kind of doctored them up and made this proprietary definition section up at the top of every program. And it, you know, it looked like COBOL, but it wasn't really COBOL. Well, there's two schools of thought. The one is they're trying to rent and neuter you from being able to leave and go somewhere else. So they've basically taken your skills and neutered it. And the other thought is a bunch of guys in the 60s just dropped too much acid and said, let's screw up COBOL. And they wanted to screw this thing up. But anyway, when I started out there, I was also, I spent about 2 weeks there, then I became an IDMS DBA. And my first job was actually we were building our own general ledger system, which in this day and age, you know, to talk to some younger people and say, yeah, I'm going to go build a GL. Like, you guys are crazy. You just go buy that thing. Why would you ever build it? And this is only 25 years ago, so this is not like, you know, ancient history. But if you think about the way things looked 25 years ago when I was building that GL, replace all these BI terms with your general ledger, with your call center, with your supply chain. Everything was all disconnected at the time, and eventually we got it all straightened out, mainly by Oracle buying everybody and SAP being pretty good at building what they were doing. So we figured out you don't need all these compartments that are out there for doing this. The same thing is happening now in all these end systems that are sitting here on top of our data warehouse and business intelligence system. You know, there's inconsistency. We don't have any alignment between the business that happens here. So the way to look at this is more of a continuum. Is that, let's start with the end in mind here. So with the end in mind here, we get business results. Well, how do we get business results? By operating the business, by having a plan that we've modeled properly, we understand the market we're going to be in, and we know how to handle the stakeholders in here. So what do? We get insight into the business, we monitor the consistency, we plan the flexibility, we plan flexibly, rethink strategy, invest and divest, we build trust, and then we do it all in concert. Nice kind of pretty pictures, but what does it mean for real? This is where Oracle is seeing results in people embracing this type of thing. Record to report is your typical BI reporting cycle. So, you know, taking a company like Alcoa, which went in there and said, you know, they basically wanted to align 58 lines of business consolidate in 5 days. They wanted everybody to be talking the same thing. A lot of technology enablement that was going on in there. And it brought them to, you know, to be able to bring those reports to 1,000 users. That's what Record the Report is about. It's a typical thing that we think about when we think about creating reports. You know, monitoring is more around the ability to understand mid-year what's going on and make adjustments to what's going on. So in this case, you know, Charles Schwab is a good, anyone work for Schwab here? Good example with Schwab is that they took and put sales analytics in front of the people that were actually dealing with the customers so that online they could identify upsell capabilities for that person, and they saw actual changes happen with that. So they weren't waiting for the reports to come out. While people were in their live, the BI system was feeding these hints on what should be happening. Planning is more along the lines of how do you understand and get a better budgeting cycle out of what you're doing. You know, what most of us do when we do budgeting is we end up doing things which are, you know, very much related to our cost centers, not something like what Fiat did, where they said, I'm going to do budgets 7 ways to Sunday. I'm going to look at the models, I'm going to look at the channels, and I'm going to create these 10 different budgets that I'm going to kind of find this cross-section in, kind of like, you know, a cube way of doing this. And that's how I'm going to determine the most optimal budget. It's not going to be that I'm going to budget by each one of these. So you can think very much like your budget at home. You know, your budget at home, you're budgeting by your actual expenses, but then you're also budgeting by, gosh, how much am I going to spend on each kid's college? You know, how much am I going to spend on each one of these? You're doing a multidimensional analysis always. Most organizations are doing a unidimensional modeling of their budget. Companies like this change the game on that. This is interesting. People getting data so that they could change their strategy. Anyone from University of Vermont? I didn't think you were. Okay. University of Vermont. So what did they do? They took their data, and the main thing that was driving them was not so much tuition. It's how much money's coming in from alumni. That's what they care about. If you haven't worked with higher eds, you know, the big thing, the money coming in with money coming in afterwards. So what they did, they used the data to profile what are the most likely type of people that if we admitted them, they would contribute money after they graduate. That wasn't the only deciding factor, but that determined how they marketed or where they started, you know, gearing things towards. They still kept their academic standards where they should be. But academic, all things being equal from academic standings, where do we want to go after for people that are going to send money back to us after their 5-year, 10-year, 25-year graduation? And they can only do that by having the data and being able to rethink their strategy. You know, so one of their key performance indicators that they actually had was related to, you know, ratio of contribution based on demographic. I mean, it's an interesting way of using data to kind of rethink your business. Investing and divesting is another way to think about it. You know, instead of just what's the strategy that we're going to do here, getting the data so you can help the business to line up their traditional budgeting cycle with their long-term goals. Burger King, good example. Burger King had a 5-year plan, and then they had a 3-year budget. And nobody ever checked if the 3-year budget was lining up with this 5-year plan they had for growth. So somebody smart in IT just basically said, what if we put all these things together and showed you kind of what it would look like in 5 years if you rang a 3-year budget for 5 years based on these assumptions that you had? You think you would meet that growth in earnings per share that you're looking at doing. It was actually IT sparking business to say, hey, you know, can't we all get along and kind of get to one thing on this? A lot of this was driven because this was being done by one Big Six consulting firm, and this was being done by another Big Six consulting firm, and they each had their own little camps of people, and they didn't want to work together. So the technology people actually made them work together on this. The last thing is gain to sustain. This is about once you have the information, how do you get it out to your stakeholders? And NYC.gov is probably the best example in the world of this, as far as I'm considered. Because think about who the stakeholders are for the mayor. It's everybody. It's all of us. You know, I'm not a citizen, but anyone who's a citizen of New York City. I'm Jersey. I'm not even second class. I'm third class. Getting the information out there, understanding what the key performance indicators are for every business, and sharing it with your stakeholders. You will find, I actually have a slide that's not in here, where TDWI did a study to figure out where are you delivering your reports and business intelligence to. And fully 70-80% of it is spent on just on internal people. Whereas, you know, most organizations have customers and have the technology, web technologies, to securely share this type of information. So this is what management excellence is all about, is, you know, if you think about it, I talked about the six C's. So, you know, what's your data and your process? Well, now it's how does it work throughout the life cycle of data in your organization? I mean, data starts way up here about thinking about what you're going to do, making some strategic decisions in these two here, building out a plan on what to do, and then reporting and making midpoint adjustments in what you're doing. It's a data life cycle. In order to do that, you need the six C's for doing that underneath. You need to understand where the data is, but you don't want to build the mother of all data warehouses. You want to kind of be real time, not right. You want to be right time, not real time on what you're doing here. And you want to, and you know, if you don't have governance with this stuff, you can probably attest to this from what you looked like pre-governance, post-governance. You just bought a lot of expensive technology that somebody's going to get fired over because you can't make the stuff work because you don't have your users in control over the governance. So now to talk a little bit about Oracle and our product direction with how this is done. What Oracle believes is that the key to this, the absolute key to this, is a single enterprise information model. We don't like to use single version of the truth, because single version of the truth basically says that there's only one way to do things. And there is more than one way to do things. So one single model. Why are there multiple ways to do things? Well, if you're an organization such as I'm working with a mutual fund company, they have both institutional and they have individual customers. They're both customers. So are you going to say, well, you can only call a customer an individual, or you can only call a customer, you know, a particular institution? No. You're going to have what I call minimal version of the truth. Find out what they are. You don't want to have 10 versions of an individual customer out there. You want to get to one version of it, but it's okay to have multiples. Oracle believes that at the center of the world, the single enterprise information model is the best key enabler for you doing this. Now, sitting behind this are all the underlying technologies, whether it's, you know, all the way down to whether it's something like Oracle Exadata to 11G to the master data management product, anything that can get you to that single version of there. There's a lot of permutations and combinations that you can do on that. Now, adding on top of this, we know there's a life cycle that happens, that you're going to detect something going on. So there's going to be some form of alert to what's happening in the organization. There's going to be an analysis phase that happens on this. Based on what you analyze, you're going to model something, and then you're actually going to take action on it. So in the example here, I'm going to detect that there's something going on with my overtime in my prison. Okay, I'm going to analyze that and say, is it just happening in one group? Is it happening in a certain shift? Is it happening in something where there's less supervisors there? And then I'm going to create a model saying, well, it's because we don't have enough supervisors there. What if I put 10 more supervisors onto those five different prisons? What would it cost me from my budgeting perspective? And model out, based on trends, would it maybe bring down these incidents? And then actually take action on it. So implement it. Now, surrounding this is an analytic foundation. And the analytic foundation is, you got three ways to do this. You know, pre-built applications, so something kind of, you know, that you buy pre-built, whether it's CRM analytics or financial analytics, things where you just buy an out-of-the-box application. Second thing is a custom application, you know, so kind of building a business intelligence from scratch for unique functions in your business that you need, or to integrate with some of the customs, or even embedding it into your CRM or ERP system where people don't even know if they're going to the BI system that's out there. So they're, you know, again, they may be somebody who's in your CRM system and they're getting some alert about that customer calls are going up, and you will behind the scenes kick out some form of a report for them that analyzes trends over the past 6 months on calls from that particular customer line. And then we think that we have analytics around the outside. And if you think about this is everything that runs the business now. And by the way, these are all everything out here is all pre-built things. This is another interesting point. If you take ERP, remember when I said I started at Prudential, we kind of built our own. That whole thing that happened there in ERP, where you went from kind of building your own to, okay, well, I can buy PeopleSoft and I can buy, McCormick and Dodge or GIAC, and I have less applications and I can kind of integrate them together. And then it got to the point where, gosh, I just buy it all from Oracle, or buy it all from SAP. Well, what's happening very quickly now in the BI space is the maturity of these applications. Almost nobody that I've worked with over the past few years is purely building from scratch without at least evaluating, can I just buy one of these things and implement it? Because how many ways can you do financial analytics? There's uniqueness in how you utilize those reports, but generally accepted accounting practices, there's only so many ways you can do that. So you have all these ERP analytics, which is your traditional non-customer facing. Then you have your customer facing out here, your Siebel analytics, your CRM type of analytics. You've got what happens in EPM. When we say EPM, that's mostly to do with the financial people, their scorecards and financial close, strategic planning. And then pre-built industry applications for doing this. This is Oracle's vision. And this vision is all backed up by products. See, it's a very interesting time for me that's kind of grown up in data warehousing and business intelligence, when I used to roll my own and build everything and spend more time trying to make stuff work together. And now I can figure out that stuff works together and actually focus on what's going on with the business. Sorry about the fonts there. This is an example of the depth that's out there in pre-built analytics now. It's important for everybody, whether you're in BI or data warehousing or in any other form of the IT in the organization, to understand what's out there now in a pre-built way. We are at a cusp. We are where ERP was in 1998. For those of you that were involved with even that, supporting ERP, at that time, it was all kind of coming together, and you were crazy if you were building anything on your own. That's about where we're getting to in this particular place in the business right now. So I talked about three things today. I talked about Chief Performance Officer. You have turbulent times. The key is to focus on performance. Chief Performance Officer, three C's. You're doing your three data C's. You're collecting, consolidating, condensing the data. And then you have your process C's, which are, that you're collaborating, and you're also, you're collaborating and, there you go. I've been saying these damn things since I wrote the book in 2003. I should know it by heart. You need to look at it from that end, but at the same time, you need to look at it from a data life cycle. But then you need to figure out how to apply technology. I'll leave you with this thought. The people that, in the 1800s, most factories were powered by coal or by water. And the successful people that ran those plants knew how to squeeze every bit of energy out of a gallon of water or out of a pound of coal. I'll bet you a billion to one that they didn't understand the DNA breakdown of that coal as they were burning it, but they understood how to use coal. The future of technology and the future of performance management is people that know how to use it, not so much people that understand the DNA that's in there. It's great if you actually understand the DNA, so you understand the inner workings of what happens with these, because then you got two bullets in the barrel, and you got a double-barreled shotgun at that point. But without understanding how this stuff can be applied to manage performance, because managing performance is the one consistency in every single organization, public or private, upmarket, downmarket, small business, big business, it's the one consistent thing that happens in every organization is they need to understand their performance indicators and they need to answer to people for that. So hopefully this was a little helpful for you tonight in understanding, you know, a bit about things that are happening and some disciplines that are out there. I didn't want to get too product, you know, deep on your stuff here. I could demo the heck out of this stuff if you need me to, but I thought it'd be a little too much for an evening session like this. So I will gladly take any questions.
So I have a couple.
Yeah.
So my first respect, I used to work right here.
Yep.
So a couple years ago.
Yep.
3 years ago.
This was all Frank, what's his name, the Dutch guy.
Highly recognizable.
Yep.
It's the right thing, right? Is that once you squeeze all the efficiency out of ERPs, you got to
squeeze somewhere else. Yep.
You got to go get it somewhere else, right? So a couple things. One is the six C's. Is that what's in the back of your head when you engage in a consulting gig with a client? I mean, do you let these guys know there's a certain amount of moving parts here that you need to put in order to get a successful project going?
I think it goes well beyond project, actually. I think it's more about what the organization needs to embrace. Too many organizations, if they're very technology-focused, they get all hung up on basically consolidating the data, and they get into a data consolidation exercise. Data consolidation exercises are great if they're going to drive cost out of your business by getting rid of servers and consolidating down to less machines. But for doing it under the guise of it's going to be good for the business without, you know, without really understanding the condensing part of how they're going to use that. Now, I see a lot of people focused there. I see a lot of people focused on scorecards and not understanding where the data is coming from. So they're more kind of focused around, you know, that real-time, write-time part, but not understanding all the technology that's behind there. So I see this as a philosophy that needs to be embraced. Can it be applied at a project level? Absolutely.
Well, how do they react to your philosophy?
I think most people, it's a combination of, yeah, we're already doing that, but we didn't think about it that way. Most people think about this as not a continuum or not in parallel. You know, they think of it, these are all kind of happening at one time. I mean, I don't want to imply by having the six C's in order that you do these in order. They're all kind of happening at once. And the smart organizations, whether they have a CPO or they, you know, I've worked with organizations, they call it the Office of Performance Management, other words, the PMO, whatever it is, the smart ones are thinking about everything at once. You know, the not so smart ones are get bogged down in one area of that. Similar to on the management excellence, a lot of people get bogged down in building great reports but don't understand, gosh, what if we just use some of this data and a little bit of it to help make a strategic change here? You know, this Vermont thing is a perfect example. They could have built the best reports in the world for understanding with student enrollment and all that. But if somebody didn't step back and kind of drill into the data and say, wow, look at this profile here, it changed their business. You know, the Burger King example, you know, they just got great technology. You know, they got good planning system. They got a good budgeting system. Nobody made them work together. And granted, a few years ago, very, very difficult to do that. You know, I may, along with other people, made a great living out of just integrating stuff together because it didn't work together. That business is gone. You know, Oracle bought everybody up and they're putting them all together. So nobody's going to be paying people to integrate together disjoint parts unless they just have legacy systems that they need to be tied together. But that will eventually die with end of life of those systems also. You know, the integration still needs to happen at a, you know, what I call database level. Still needs to be a heck of a lot of integration work done there. But integration at an application layer, it's mostly going away now. You know, other question?
Yeah. So taking a look at these BI applications packaged, you can buy them to support your ERP implementation. So how long before your job goes away and all this becomes ubiquitous to purchasing the functional part?
Actually, the most organization, my job won't go away because I'm smart enough to change. You know, remember I was a COBOL programmer. So, and you know, and I'm a
Plus.
Yeah. Okay, that's pretty bad.
More, okay.
Yes.
But I guess the question is, so when does BI become part of standard issue for applications, as opposed to a different set of tools that bolt on the top?
5 years or less. 5 years or less. The way Oracle's seeing BI sold right now, it's mostly being sold in conjunction with ERP and CRM when the customers are making that change.
That's exactly.
Yeah, and it's being sold as a continuum. You know, that concept that I talked about, where if you're, you know, if you've got a dashboard up here, so in your dashboard you've got, you know, a couple of key performance indicators in this dashboard, and you say, oh wow, I really want to understand that particular metric, but that data needs to come from your ERP system that's out here, which can generate a report for doing that. You don't make your user get up and go here. You basically embed this information through links into here and or the data being in here, depending on what level of technology is. You know, if this is Oracle Business Intelligence and this is ERP or CRM, you basically just tell it where to go. If this is, you know, Oracle Business Intelligence and this is SAP, you kind of embed the call underneath there. The days of making people go to those two places. So a typical value-add sell that Oracle does to a new customer is, let's take CRM. Tell me about your customer attainment cycle and what happens. Okay, there's a whole bunch of operational stuff. You prospect and do all these other things, but then territory management that people are doing to understand where they're going to go after that, you need reports for doing that. And you need analytics for doing that. You know, that line between analytics and reporting is so blurred right now, and then dashboards are being kind of meshed in with that now too. You know, the trend now is people are talking about scorecards being above dashboards, just because consultants want. I was a consultant, and consultants love to create new words to create more billing.
Right. Same church for
computer. Yeah.
Yeah. Scorecards and dashboards. But so, where do you see the business going? Do you see interactive modeling taking place over an iPod in the middle of a conference room on the fly?
I don't know. Let me tell you a story why I say I don't know about that. When I left Oracle, I made a brief stint at American Home Products, a pharmaceutical company, the people that brought you Fen-Phen, if you remember that. I was responsible for bringing a data warehouse system there. That's why they hired me away. And what I did, I brought in all the vendors for doing their BI demos. I already had my heart set on Oracle and Informatica. I knew that I was going to bring those two in because we had a clean slate. I could bring in whatever I wanted. So I brought Cognos through. I brought Business Objects through. Hummingbird at the time. I brought those through. And I brought MicroTragedy through. So the MicroStrategy guys come in and they set up the, you know, remember this is 98. So they come in, they put a laptop here, they put a two-way pager here on the table, and they put something else over here, and then they had a rudimentary wireless setup, believe it or not, back then. They said, we're going to go on the database, and we're going to trigger that sales just dropped off drastically. And, you know, we're all sitting there in the conference room, and then all of a sudden, all these things go off. He says, pick it up. Sales just went down by 20%. Press A to get another report. Press B to reorganize your department. You know, it was kind of kitschy what they were doing it, but that I always think about that when we think about mobility and analytics, is how much action can you really take without deep analysis? You know, so you know, if you're there on your iPhone and you know we have an iPhone app and you can actually do that, but too much action without giving people or even forcing people to do some of those analytics, you know, reorganize your department. Imagine if you built a heuristic system that was so smart that understood, gosh, this really is a reason why you want to reorganize your department, or this is a reason why you want to cut 5% of your sales force. Well, doing that on a push button based on a heuristic engine is not good.
Yeah, but at the same time, I can see somebody saying, what if we can squeeze another 3% out of the European guys?
Yeah.
And then just dial it in and then just see what happens to the bottom line.
What if analysis?
Yeah.
Mobile what if analysis? Mobile predictive analytics? Absolutely. Mobile predictive analytics should be there, like, I don't know what, or believe me, I in no way I'm talking about product direction, but the industry as a whole should be embracing mobile analytics very quickly. You know, if you talk to some of the people at TDWI, that's where they see it going. And it's not just mobile analytics, it's embedded data mining that's happening with this also. Because that's some very interesting things that are going on now, give you, you know, with the horsepower that's available now and things like Oracle Exadata and embedding data mining into that now. All kinds of crazy stuff I see going on.
Exadata's apps running on Sun hardware that's
doing? No, Exadata is a database machine. What it does is it's an 11.2 specific configuration that has database nodes, it has storage, and it has its own network built into it. It's
a box.
Yeah. It's a big 42U cabinet that has 100 terabytes in it and can, you know, and can process, you know, millions of IOPS, and it handles data warehousing and OLTP at once. So for me, it's great. All of a sudden, I'm seeing my mainframe days come back when you used to put everything on the same machine. You know, before we need to separate out and data warehouse goes here and everything goes here. In the old days, you just kind of put everything on the same machine and you kind of used MVS to segment it off and they never stepped on each other. That's what Exadata is. Exadata is a database machine. It's a way of taking, I'm working with a university here in the state, and they are taking every single database that they have and putting them onto this single machine. Yeah, it's cool.
You can continue this outside if you want.
Yep.
But I want to thank Tony for coming tonight, and thanks for the BIPW.
Thank you, everybody.